Well, we're at study number 21 in our series, Ask the Exiles, but it's only the second study in the book of Esther. As we said last week, it's the only book in the Bible which doesn't mention the name of God. The characters don't address God, and no work of divine providence is attributed to God by the writer. And yet, its story displays beyond doubt the presence and activity of God amongst his people. And we'll see that as we look at the characters of both Esther and Mordecai, the cousins, and we'll discover that their story has God written all over it. We have learned that Esther, the Jewish orphan, was being raised by her cousin Mordecai, who was some kind of civil servant or other, living in quarters that were housed in the palace complex at Shushan. And that King Ahasuerus, historically known as Xerxes, was in search of a new queen to replace the last one, the rebellious Vashti. And that in that search, the main criteria was just to be the most beautiful. We left off our reading in chapter 2, so we'll pick it up again in chapter 2 and verse 8. Esther 2 and verse 8. So, it came to pass, when the king's commandment and his decree was heard, and when many maidens were gathered together unto Shushan the palace to the custody of Haggai, that Esther was brought also into the king's house to the custody of Haggai, keeper of the woman. The last time when we looked at our little thoughts around chapter 1 mostly, we had framed our thoughts around a question, and the question was, have I something that God could use? And Esther was beautiful and fair, is the description that we have here in the Word of God, and how that was something that could be abused or used. But today's study, we have another question, and I want us to center our thoughts around this. Can I lose sight of who I am? Can I lose sight of who I am? So just into verse 9, and the maiden pleased him. Now that's Haggai, the keeper of the woman, of course. Speaking of Esther, she pleased him. Now, obviously this character called Haggai was well experienced in managing women. So we don't get too many of his tips here, men. Given for us. I'm sure you would like to find out what they were, but he was put in a very responsible position, the keeper of the woman. What? Sounds like a bit of a contradiction, doesn't it? A man, the keeper of the woman, but it seemed to work. And I'm sure whenever he saw these young women coming in, he would realize that the competition was pretty stiff with these candidates. They would all be the best that there was with regard to looks. But he would also have a good eye for what the king would be looking for. It wasn't all about him. If they pleased him, it would be an indication that he had found at least a group, a selection that would also please the king. And we can assume that he spotted those qualities in Esther. In fact, we can assume, the way it's worded, that these qualities stood out in Esther. Verse 9 again. And the maiden pleased him, and she obtained kindness of him. And he speedily gave her her things for purification, with such things as belonged to her or were assigned to her, and 7 maidens which were meet to be given her out of the king's house. And he preferred her and her maids unto the best place of the house of the woman, or he made sure that they got that preferential place in the house of the woman. So straight away, we see that here's a girl who, against all the odds, is appealing to, or found appealing to, Haggai, the keeper of the woman. She's in a different world, mind you. In a very different world to the one she grew up in, an orphan being raised by Mordecai, her cousin. And her experience is not unlike that of some other characters who we've been thinking about because they're exiles. Think of Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, and how they very quickly found themselves in a different world. And yet they also found themselves being blessed in that they were prospered by those who had the authority to be in charge of them. They seemed to gain favor wherever they went. But there is a difference, because when it came to Esther, instead of being taught the history, wisdom, and science of the Persians, as Daniel and his friends were by the Babylonians, Esther was to be immersed in a beauty regime that was second to none. See, the boys, if you like, were going to be brainwashed, but Esther was going to be literally washed. The boys had been selected from those taken from their homeland. Yes, because of their good looks, that is mentioned, but also because of their intelligence and their wisdom. But in all cases, the ultimate goal of selecting these young people, whether it's Esther or the boys who had gone before her, was that they would be able to and fit to stand before the king. But there are differences, of course. The boys were Jews, Daniel and his friends, and known to be Jews. Esther, on the other hand, is a Jew, but Haggai and his staff didn't know about that just yet. As we read in verse 10, Esther had not showed her people nor her kindred, for Mordecai had charged her that she should not show it. Now, why did Mordecai ask Esther to conceal her Jewishness? After all, when we get to chapter 3, we'll discover that when people refer to Mordecai, they refer to him as Mordecai the Jew. And you'll recall that as they searched for these most beautiful women, they were to search in every province. And the empire, as we mentioned last time, stretched over a vast area. Lots of different ethnic groups, and within those ethnic groups, lots of different religious practices. So it wasn't that odd that there would be beautiful girls there who were from different places, different races, spoke different languages, and had different religious observances. So why would Esther need to worry about concealing her Jewishness? But remember our question for today. Can I lose sight of who I am? Mordecai must have had a good reason to advise Esther to keep quiet about her background and heritage. But that approach wasn't entirely trouble-free. It's one thing if our young people, our sons and daughters, for example, today, if they fail to take their stand in school or college or the workplace, that's one thing, if they fail to do that. But if they're actively encouraged not to take their stand, if they're actively encouraged to conceal who they are in Jesus, that's another thing, isn't it? Because the temptation to hide their identity in the Lord Jesus Christ when under pressure to fit in, it's usually strong enough to cause many of our young people to deny the Lord. But then for someone, a parent or a guardian, to actively advise them to hide who they are in Jesus, would that not seem counterproductive to us? What if Esther was to abuse this directive that came from Mordecai? What if she had taken this as an opportunity to leave behind every trace of her Jewish upbringing, including her Jewish moral compass? What if the old flesh life within her had said, right girl, this is your opportunity, this is your chance to really go to town by not being the Jewish girl? In fact, be as un-Jewish as it's possible to be. What if she had taken that attitude? Do you see the danger? can I lose sight of who I am? Did Esther lose sight of who she was? Who she was in Mordecai's eyes? More importantly, who she was in God's eyes? Verse 11. And Mordecai walked every day before the court of the woman's house to know how Esther did and what should become of her. I like the fact that Mordecai cared. There was his young charge without father or mother. And now she's taken away from the only family that she knew, his household. And I often wonder, what was Mordecai thinking? Here he is walking, getting as close as he could to the place where Esther was. But what was he thinking? Maybe he'd be thinking or asking himself this question. Would she have the spiritual strength to withstand temptation in a very fleshly environment? Maybe he was thinking, would she be subject to abuse? Maybe what wouldn't have been called abuse then would be called abuse today. Would she be able to live as a servant of the Lord without publishing it? I remember when I went into the, really, I suppose, my second workplace, and they didn't need to observe me very long until I was asked, just a few days in, are you a Christian? I didn't go in saying on the first day, oh, by the way, I'm a Christian. But within a few days, I was asked, are you a Christian? They'd obviously listened, and they hadn't heard any bad language and so on. But I also worked in that same workplace where there was another character, and he was always preaching to folk and talking about how wonderful his particular fellowship was and so on, and inviting folk at every opportunity along. But the same man was having affairs with a woman who worked in the factory in the car park. And that was so sad. And I went into that environment as a young Christian. That's one of the things that was thrown at me. Look at him. That was tough. You had to then learn to discover that you have to point people to Jesus, because it's not easy whenever there's a bad testimony in that place. You see, you can live as a servant of the Lord without publishing it. And you can publish that you're a servant of the Lord and not live it. Mordecai walked every day before the court of the woman's house to know how Esther did and what should become of her. That also reminds me of a Bible story that happened way before this. And it's in the very early life of Moses, just when he was a baby. Remember how his mother Jochebed had made that little floating casket and placed it in amongst the reeds in the river? But that wasn't all. Moses' sister Miriam, didn't she stand watch to see how he did? Isn't that interesting? This is what we read in Hebrews 11 about those early days in Moses' life. By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hidden for 3 months by his parents because they saw that he was a beautiful child and they were not afraid of the king's edict. And Moses ended up in the palace as well. I wonder if Esther knew that Mordecai was there every day. I wonder if she caught glimpses of him. I wonder if he was able to get messages to her. Did Mordecai have insider help to ask after Esther's welfare? We don't know. But we do know that he couldn't stay away. Mordecai cared. Let me ask you this. Is somebody looking out for you? Young people, is somebody looking out for you? Does somebody care for you? Unsaved person, does somebody care for you? Mordecai cared. I think of the prophet Hosea. Do you remember he was instructed to take someone and marry her, someone he knew would be unfaithful, and he married Gomer. And even though she left him at one point and she went after other men and her life was a total mess, she played the harlot, Hosea always looked out for her. Hosea went into the street where she lived. Hosea left things for her benefit. We would maybe say today a box of groceries on her doorstep. Hosea cared. That was a picture of something else. Think of the prodigal son, the story that Jesus told. The father was watching. The father cared. I think of the story of the good shepherd. He left the 99 and he went in search of the one that had gone astray. The shepherd cared. And all of these are pictures of the Lord's watchfulness and the Lord's long-suffering and the Lord's care for his own. You could say many things today, but you can never say that God doesn't care. But it's also wonderful, isn't it, whenever you discover that the Lord's people care. Mordecai cared. Verse 12. Now, when every maid's turn was come to go in to King Ahasuerus after that she had been, and witty hear this list of things, 12 months according to the manner of woman, for so were the days of their purifications accomplished, to wit, or in other words, 6 months with oil of myrrh, 6 months with sweet odors and with other things for the purifying of the woman. Then thus came every maiden in unto the king. Whatsoever she desired was given her to go with her out of the house of the woman unto the king's house. In the evening she went, and on the morrow she returned unto the second house of the woman, to the custody of Sheashgaz, the king's chamberlain, which kept the concubines. She came in unto the king no more, except the king delighted in her, and that she were called by name. She had really only been a number up to this point. But what a process. Drenched in potions and concoctions from head to toe, pickled in oil, soaked in scent for a year. Now, men, married men, how long did it take your wife to get ready this morning? Longer than you would have liked? Maybe not. Did she come out smelling beautiful? Maybe it's my nose, but years ago, a lot of more people used to wear perfume and aftershave. Is that a thing of the past? I don't hardly ever. Maybe it's my nose giving up. But it used to be the done thing, didn't it? And out you came, gassing everybody around you. Well, you want to smell this girl after a year? That was some process, wasn't it? And then came the next selection stage, which led the girls into becoming more intimately acquainted with the king. And if that went well, then the candidate would leave the accommodation where Haggai was boss and go onto the second house of the woman into the custody of Sheashgaz, keeper of the concubines. And there she would wait until her name was called. And that would be a true indication that the king had found her irresistible. Can I lose sight of who I am? That's her question, remember that. She's just been put through this process. You know, for many young people in the 21st century, this level of pampering and physical improvement or enhancement, and if you look at today's equivalent of this, it sounds like a dream come true. Because there's pressure on young people today to conform to some image or other. Esther was immersed in cosmetics, but she could also so easily have been immersed in an image-conscious mindset. Are we not reaping some problems from that? She could have immersed herself in materialism and superficiality. She could have immersed herself in exhibitionism, hedonism. she could have immersed herself in every kind of indulgence and extravagance available to her. In short, she could have forgotten who she was in the sight of God. Can I lose sight of who I am? Am I a different person when I'm in a different environment? Am I easily drawn into another world? Do I readily embrace the things that we've been talking about in these verses? Verse 15. Now when the turn of Esther, the daughter of Abihail, the uncle of Mordecai, who had taken her for his daughter, was come to go into the king, she required nothing but that Haggai, the king's chamberlain, the keeper of the woman appointed, and Esther obtained favor in the sight of all them that looked upon her. She had obviously an opportunity of taking something with her, and she said, I don't need that. I like that, because after all of that process that we've just read together, here steps a girl from one place to another place who isn't high maintenance. She's not high maintenance. Young people, think about this. Do you think, is that a Christian quality? Being high maintenance. She could have asked for whatever she desired. Perhaps this was a reference to some of the beauty equipment that she had at her disposal when she was going through this whole process. Maybe she had been used to using a fine bronze hand mirror. Maybe she had a lovely alabaster jar that she sat in her dressing table, perhaps a carved ivory comb. Maybe these are things she was used to having, and she now had the opportunity. Well, now that you're leaving, you have our permission to take those things with you. I know what some of you would have done, because there may just be somebody here, and you're one of those people who goes to a nice hotel on holiday. You know what I'm going to say. There's shampoo, there's soap, there's a shower cap, there's maybe, depending on how posh the hotel is, there might even be disposable slippers. There's sachets of coffee and tea and all the sort. They even have to screw pictures to the wall. And when we were in business, we had to supply a certain kind of thing to hold tie backs, because the people stole everything. Towels, you name it. If you're sitting here today and you've got a towel on it, and written on it is the Ritz or the Pits, whatever, wherever you've been, may the Lord forgive you. Well, she was given permission to take whatever she wanted. And you know what? She only took what they said she needed. She didn't ask for anything else. Can I lose sight of who I am? We're starting to see something about this lady, aren't we? She's beautiful to look at, yet, yes, but she's not a grabber. She's not materialistic. Could it be, here's a thought, that because the situation she was in was arranged, she couldn't do much about it. She couldn't do anything about her own beauty. And she was chosen, she was brought in, and she makes it through all the selection process, and she could so easily have failed at several hurdles. But she makes it right through. But this was not her choosing. Remember that when we were looking at Ezra, the seriousness of the people in Jerusalem, the returnees, the seriousness of the fact that they took up with folks who weren't Jewish, they intermarried. So this would not have been Esther's choice. This is a situation that's far from ideal. Could it be that she refused to take anything else for this reason? She wasn't going to milk a situation that she was in her heart unhappy with. You know, there are many situations that come, we can do nothing about. We can be unhappy with. But we don't have to milk them. Can I lose sight of who I am? So far, we have every reason to believe that Esther, who was living in luxury, was trying to be at the same time the same Esther who lived with Mordecai in his home. Was Mordecai able to get access to her in this second place? We don't know. Perhaps he's seen enough. Perhaps he's witnessed enough in those years that have passed to know that she's my girl. She hasn't forgotten who she is. She hasn't lost sight. Even though I've told her to conceal her Jewishness, she hasn't lost sight of who she is. At the end of verse 15, and we'll read that wee bit again, Esther obtained favor in the sight of all them that looked upon her. And that's a powerful statement if you think about it. Why do I say that? Well, she's in this environment with all these young women, and it would be a very competitive environment. They were all jockeying for the top job. And you can just imagine when it's so oriented towards beauty, the competitive nature of that. Wouldn't that just be a situation rife for jealousy? Can you imagine a reality show based around this? It would be horrendous the way they would get on. That makes this all the more surprising, doesn't it, when it says that she obtained favor in the sight of all them that looked upon her. Verse 16. So Esther was taken unto King Ahasuerus into his house royal. So this is the third stage. In the 10th month, which is the month Tebet, in the 7th year of his reign. Our story in the book of Esther really began with the 3rd year of the reign of Ahasuerus, because it was in the 3rd year that Vashti publicly embarrassed him. Now we're in the 7th year in the 10th month. So time has passed. Verse 17. And the king loved Esther above all the women, and she obtained grace and favor in his sight more than all the virgins, so that he set the royal crown upon her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. So it has taken this length of time to get another queen on the throne. But this time, this queen just happens to be a Jewish orphan, the daughter of captives. Once again, an exiled Israelite is advanced by the Lord in the place of their captivity. You see, although the book of Esther doesn't contain a single reference to God, yet it's a book of parallels. We said last week it's a book of contrast. We'll mention that in a second or two. But it's also a book of parallels, because the events in the book of Esther find parallels in the lives of other people, and they most certainly do attribute the events in their life to God. Think of Joseph in Egypt. Look at how he climbed to second in command to Pharaoh. Moses. I think of Daniel again and Hananiah. All of them, in reference to each one, they were promoted and put over all these others in the earlier days of the Babylonian captivity. Ezra also. And we'll get to Nehemiah, who was the king's cupbearer. Verse 18. Then the king made a great feast unto all his princes and his servants, even Esther's feast. And he made a release to the provinces and gave gifts according to the state of the king. And when the virgins were gathered together the second time, then Mordecai sat in the king's gate. Keep that wee thought there in your mind. Mordecai sat in the king's gate. Esther had not yet showed her kindred nor her people as Mordecai had charged her. For Esther did the commandment of Mordecai like as when she was brought up with him. That's a wonderful statement. Can I lose sight of who I am? These years later, she's still behaving as she did when she was brought up with him. She's Queen Esther, but she hasn't forgotten that she was once the young charge of her cousin Mordecai, and she's still respectful and obedient towards him, even though she's in a vastly different environment. Isn't that lovely? I believe Mordecai equipped Esther with excellent life skills, which she could take with her anywhere through life, even into marriage, even into palace life. Such attributes were easily transferable because they were in her heart. Virtues that would be every bit as attractive as her outer beauty, maybe even more so. But certainly virtues that would last far longer, because no matter how beautiful we have been in our prime, youth and beauty pass away. Is that what the hymn writer says? Oh, you have not long to stay, be in time. Proverbs 22:6 says this: train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. We don't know the outcomes always, but we know how to start. And we'll only ever be responsible for what we put in. What happens thereafter is no longer our responsibility. Get it in there. Train up a child in the way they should go. What's the best way to train? Just to get words into their mind and into their head and be able to say, well, I sent them to Sunday school and they went to every meeting and they went to 10 Sunday schools in a week. Is that the benchmark? No. I can speak from personal experience. What impacted me and my siblings most, the seven of us were saved, is we saw a life lived in front of us. But it wasn't just a life lived in front. There was one thing stood out more than anything else. And that was, we were convinced that our mother and father put God first in everything. God, his work, his house came first in everything. Every decision. And that's the training we got. We saw that. We witnessed that. And it impacted our lives. Remember what I said last time, that the characters were contrasting characters. Well, think again of Vashti and Esther. The selfish Queen Vashti, whose beauty was only skin deep. The unselfish Queen Esther, who had both outer and inner appeal. The former queen was good for show. She was a trophy consort. She had the ability to turn heads, no doubt, in the court. She could throw a great party, we know that. But with herself as the centre of attraction. And she wasn't prepared to leave one such party when the king asked her to. How different Vashti's replacement, called Esther. Can I lose sight of who I am? Well, the next wee bit's the exciting bit I was hoping to get to, but I think time has beaten us, and to be fair to it, I think we'll cover that next week.